Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome, you amazing humans. Welcome to another episode of Mysteries with a History, where I'll take you on the wild ride into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions. Like you, I want answers. Today's topic is a deep dive into the controversial and shocking Majestic 12 documents story. I want to preface this correctly first. You see, this is old information. It's an old story, yet it seems very relevant to recent events concerning government transparency of the UFO topic. It was all new to me, and I know that even though a lot of this information has been available for a long time, there are so many young people like me who have recently entered into this amazing mystery who do not know about things such as MJ-12. And so that's why I'm doing this here today. I'm learning myself about the history and the mystery and spreading awareness to my younger audience of just what this is all about. Before we even dive into what Majestic 12 is, let me bring in my extra special guest, Jimmy Church from Fade to Black. Hey, Jimmy.
There I am. I'm tweeting. I'm tweeting right now, Christina. How you doing? I'm tweeting you out.
Hello, Twitterverse.
Come join us right now. And just let me get this out. You just jumped in so quick. This is what happens on something that is live, everybody. This is the kind of thing that goes down. Okay, I think I am back. Yeah, there I am. Hello, everybody. I don't have the chat up again today, but anyway, Majestic 12. And thank you for doing this.
Well, thank you for being here. I mean, this is a topic that, like I said, has been going on for a while, but you had the connections with people that really dove really deep into the subject, such as Stanton Freeman. And we are going to go a little bit more in depth than that. But before we even start onto my questions, I have quite a few questions for you, Jimmy. But my first thing I want to start on is just, what is Majestic 12, also known as MJ-12? Do you want to tell the story or do you want me to tell the story?
Well, I would love to hear your take on it. But there are two distinct situations here that we're talking about. Now, if we both revolve around the same cast of characters, by the way, but Majestic 12. Now, I don't have a bunch of stuff up in front of me, everybody. This is just...
You're winging it.
Yeah, going through research over the years. And but let's start with Majestic 12 itself.
Yes. Jim, before you start, I quickly want to say thank you to NP for the $20 super sticker. Thank you so much for supporting this channel. I deeply appreciate it. Okay, Jimmy, Go ahead. The floor is yours.
$20 will get an interruption with Jimmy Church at any moment in time. And now I know where that dollar value is. Is this though? Okay, let's focus on this. Majestic 12 itself showed up in the mailbox of a producer here in Hollywood in Burbank by the name of Jamie Chanderay.
And this was in December of 1984.
That is correct, 1984. And so Jamie Chanderay at that time was involved with a lot of topics and breaking stories in the UFO community. And he was a television producer, but he also worked, one of his partners was the now infamous William Bill Moore. And so they worked together on a lot of different projects, and they broke a lot of, there was a lot of things that surfaced because of them. And Bill Moore back at that time, throughout the 80s, was the biggest name, one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name in all of ufology. He was headlining the conferences. He had the best-selling books. He had the documents. He had the connections, and all of this stuff was pretty rapid fire, and it was a pretty exciting time. And then through in the middle of all of this, MJ-12 surfaces. So Jamie Chanderay gets an envelope in his mailbox. It's got a film strip on it with some photographs of some documents, and which led to the now infamous Majestic 12, which were 12 individuals put together by Washington and the White House, intellectuals, a wide range of people, some familiar names, some not so familiar, that were investigating not only UFOs and ET, but had a policy and how things were, they created policy on how things were dealt with the UFO subject. And now, looking at that list of names, that's one thing. We can circle back to that. But as this broke out, the UFO community started to examine these documents. There was, I believe there was 8 pages in the original one.
Yeah, here's the document.
Correct. There it is. And this has been pored over and investigated by everybody at every single level. And now, when I originally viewed these documents, I was blown away by them. A lot of research into typesetting and words and signatures and things. But putting that aside, then there was the MJ-12 documents that surfaced later, also with the same group of-
Jason Faye says, I just wanted to interrupt Jimmy. Thanks for the $9.99, Jason.
Wow, it's going down. The next interruption will be $1.99.
Hey. Right. Watch on. It happen.
Really appreciate that. And so Stanton Friedman gets involved very early on. And we all know Stanton Friedman. And for those that don't, he was a nuclear physicist that had a very promising and successful career in the private industry when it came to nuclear science and physics and possibly the design of nuclear powered aircraft and things. But then got into the UFO subject and as an investigator and a journalist and an author, and soon became not only the face of ufology, he was the fair and balanced, educated nuclear physicist personality that represented us, and we all loved Stanton. He's no longer with us, of course, but Stanton gets involved. And once Stanton is involved in this, now we have a certain stamp of credibility that is brought into this, because Stanton was very pragmatic and very black and white. Now, over the years, his opinion changed on the documents themselves. Not so much about the idea of Majestic 12 and a group of people working inside of the government covertly on the UFO subject, that part, I think we can all agree, always existed. Does that mean that the Majestic 12 documents were real? That's another part of the debate, but let's examine that for a second. So let's just stop right there. There is no question in my mind that there has always been a group of intellectuals working on the behalf or directly for our government on the UFO subject, about the technology, what is going on. That has to have always existed. Was it called Majestic 12? Don't know. Yeah, the revelations about ATIP, OSAP, ATIP, and Bigelow, and that group of individuals, you know, this is a more modern context,
right,
is that the version of Majestic 12? It is the idea, right? It's the germ of the idea behind Majestic 12 that this stuff has to be going on. Right. So that's the part of Majestic 12 that I've always found the most intriguing. And it allowed us to, as a community, to dive deep to not only figure things out, but who these individuals are. There were a lot of names on the list that you would find very, very interesting. And let me go back to some of my private notes here. Okay. So if we look at some of the names on this list, which now I have just lost.
I will share the screen.
You're going to share my screen?
Oh, no. I have the names right here.
Okay. One of the names on this list that all of us found pretty interesting was Don Menzel. And yes. Don Menzel... we've got a very little time here, so I'm not going to, you know, we could do a whole show on who Menzel was, but Menzel, his public stance on it was, UFOs are not real. We're not being visited. There's nothing to see here. And he was very outspoken and he was a debunker. And
yeah,
I think that history says that very clearly. I never met the man. But so why would Menzel be on a list like this for Majestic 12? And so for a lot of UFO researchers that looked at this said, you know what, in a strange way, that makes a lot of sense. Publicly, he's a disinformation agent.
Mm-hmm.
Privately, he knows the truth and he's here with everybody else, you know, Hill and Cotter and James Forrestal and Vannevar Bush.
Very big names.
Big names, right? And Menzel, I think, you know, we got Hoyt Vandenberg, right? Nathan Twining, of course, and the famous Twining memo. But it was Menzel that for a lot of us, including myself, kind of stepped back and thought, well, maybe there's more truth to the Majestic 12 documents than we think. Because Menzel, if he's on this list, everybody knows how his stance has been very public, you know, debunking, right. Very skeptical, very public, very loud about this. But yet he shows up on the list of, you know, he's on the board of directors of
Majestic. And that's what made the list so confusing for people, was because why would you put a debunker, right, a part of MJ-12 who go ahead and collect crashed UFOs and entities? So for a lot of people, they automatically believed that this document was total bogus just because his name was on it. And why would a Harvard professor of astrophysics, right? And a debunker of UFOs be on this list, who also held a top secret ultra clearance and was a security advisor to several presidents? That's my big question. Why would a humble, you know, Harvard professor need to have a top secret ultra clearance?
Humble? I wouldn't use the word humble when it came to Menzel. He was vicious. He was a vicious guy when it came to the UFO subject. He was not part of our team for sure. And used his name and his position to go straight at the debunking and defaming of individuals and the UFO subject and the ET question altogether. Humble.
I'm using that word lightly, as in someone that simply shouldn't have that kind of clearance for being just an average professor. It's how I meant to use the word.
Right. And Christina, I'm in no way suggesting that you use the word incorrectly. I'm glad that you used it so we can make sure that we're very clear about this. Menzel, again, shouldn't have been on this list. He's the last person that would be supporting and investigating and have knowledge of ET, exposed to knowledge of ET and UFOs. When his public position was the exact opposite. So that's where you go, maybe this is disinformation. Maybe Menzel is out there as a disinformation agent doing his job to bring down people in the UFO community and debunk things, when in reality, he's working with the CIA. And I think that that is part of history now, too, as well. And he was a mouthpiece for that, but yet he was on the board of directors of Majestic 12. Mm-hmm. So now this is where I want to spin this back to you. I want to talk about Stan Friedman a little bit more, but as you started to do your dive into Majestic 12, I'm curious as to how your mind and how you feel that the information supports or doesn't this subject. What did you find?
So honestly, I went in blind. I knew the name of MJ-12, but I wasn't really sure what it was about and the history behind it, because there is just a fat chunk of history you have, and it's split. You have people that truly believe that this is just a BS story. None of it's real. Everything is written here, right, just to confuse the public. And then you have the other half who believe that this is, at least some parts of these documents are legitimate, such as Stanton Friedman, who spent 10 years trying to authenticate certain records that we have and that we're going to be talking about today out of the so many that he got, right? He was only able to legitimize just a few of them. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, the short answer is yes, but the answer is one. Okay, the answer is one. Now, I've had, let me just say this. I got to know Stanton pretty well. And he was somebody that took the time not only to come on the show and always be very gracious with his time and doing interviews all the time. But privately, I was able to hang out with him an awful lot. And I had some not only face-to-face time with Stanton, and I'll tell a quick story here in a second.
Well, but first, before you tell the story, Jack D. Whiskey dropped a $1.99 super sticker. Thank you so much. You got to interrupt Jimmy yet again. Thank you so much.
$1.99. 99 cents is up next. Let's see who does 99 cents. I'll give that 99 cent interruption a personal shout out, which is this. Stanton and I, we were in the middle of this long conversation and talking about the MJ-12 documents, separate issue, and the Majestic 12 documents, again, a separate issue. And I said, okay, Stanton, what's real and what's not here? And he said, Jimmy, my opinion, now he's no longer with us now, so I'm speaking for him. But he said that he's investigated this for so long now, and he went from thinking that everything was authentic in the beginning to today, which would have been, this was probably 2017. I'm not sure when he passed away, but it was 2018. So it was right in that area. And he said, I can only support and authenticate one document, and that is the Twining document. And that's the only one out of this batch that I think is authentic. Now, the Twining document, which has been poured over so much, and there are some out there that think that Truman's signature on that was not authentic. There's others that say that it is. But that being said, Stanton steadfastly said that the Twining memo was authentic. The rest of it, he just couldn't put his stamp of approval on it. Now that being said, everybody, this is the other part about this entire mess when it comes to, because the stack of documents combined is this
thick. Yeah, it's thick.
It's a lot of information. And I've read every page multiple times. And this is the thing. I believe that there are elements, large chunks of truth and fact inside of those documents. And that's how you get disinformation out there. You've got truth, you've got facts, you've got verifiable things, then you have the message in there buried that you're trying to get out into the public, right? And that's what we have been forced to doing with both sets of these documents for so many years. And that was something that for Stanton, who, and others, right? The Woods, Bob Wood, and the way that they have done all of their analysis, that includes Richard Dolan, Linda Moulton Howe. They have pored over these documents, Grant Cameron, over and over and over again. And now if we go back and look at the sources of all of this, and I've done my best to discuss this with as many people involved as possible, was that this is the nugget I'm going to leave everybody here, where they're just going to go, holy crap, right? Well, I guess that's how it has to be, which is this. I originally thought that it was Bill Moore and Jamie Chanderay and somebody else that knew documents, got an old typewriter, got old paper stock, and started formatting government documents in some room somewhere in Burbank. And they're typing these things out, and they're making sure that they get a perfect page. You can't have a typo, right? So you got to type this. This isn't a word processor. This isn't that, you know, this is typing.
This is hard.
And eventually you're going to get a complete set of documents. And I thought in my own mind's eye that that was how this was created. But you would have to have the database of all of the individuals, where they were, place, date, time, and everything has got to fit together and has got to match and be perfect. And that stopped a lot of researchers over the years trying to debunk this, because as they dived into it, the people and places and dates and things matched up. And this was before the internet. So where do you get all? So that's when I backed off of this and started to look at it with a different lens. And now enters Richard Doty. Richard, if you're listening right now, you knew I was going to say your name. And that is because Richard Doty, of course, is using Bill Moore at the time as an asset for the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. We all know this as a historical fact. Was Jamie Chanderay privy to this? That pulls in Stanton Friedman. Why was, you know, did Stanton know? Well, at the time, Stanton didn't know, but are you being used as a tool in this? Now, let's back up again, because I asked Richard if Bill created the documents, Bill Moore, Jamie Chanderay. He said, no, the documents were created in Washington by those that knew not only the people, places, things, and facts, because it's Washington. They had that, but they also were able to prepare their own message that was going to be buried in these documents. But they were created by a very special clandestine hoaxing document hoaxing group at the Pentagon. Now, that makes a lot of sense, because you would have to be able to have access to how these documents are typed, how they're formatted,
even what typewriter to use as well, because they're all slightly different, the branding that you use. But what's also interesting that you brought up was Bill Moore and possibly Stanton Friedman creating fake documents. I was watching a documentary with Stanton Friedman in it, and he was saying that there were rumors going around saying that him and Bill Moore agreed to create fake documents, have them be spread out to the public, hoping that the government or whoever is writing these documents to feel pressure and put out either the real documents or completely saying that the ones that they wrote were a hoax, trying to find the true information. Now, when Stanton was asked about this, because Bill Moore didn't want to be a part of this documentary, Stanton said that was completely false and that he never agreed to something like that. And I found that really interesting how if it was a rumor or if it's a fact, it's crazy how with this field, no matter what topic you're trying to follow, no matter what project you're trying to understand, everything is like a coin. You got two sides to it.
99 cents just came in, Jason Frey.
Well, no, John Music has a question. And I also want to say hi to John Greenwald Jr. So good to see you. And I did place the link for some of the documents below from the Black Vault as well. And he told me when I interviewed him, he said that Stanton Friedman was one of the very few people that actually reached out back to John when he was new to the topic. And that like really warmed my heart that if I had the chance, I would have loved to meet Stanton the way that John got to meet him at such a young age. Truly beautiful. So John Music has a question. Thank you so much, by the way. And he says, John Forrestal and Mark McCandlish. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. It's been said by many had suspicious suicides and that John Mack had suspicious accidents. Thoughts of if MJ-12 or similar group had anything to do with the deaths?
Now, Forrestal... McCandlish is a modern event that just went down a few months ago. But Forrestal, putting Mark McCandlish to the side for a second, and we talked about him a couple of weeks ago on your broadcast. But and by the way, John Greenwald, bro, if you're listening, you didn't pick up my call 30 minutes ago. That wasn't cool, bro. I'm calling you out live on the air, bro.
Oh, and it was great to see him on the new show, UFO, as well. So if you guys haven't seen it, I know you talked about it with Richard Dolan yesterday, but I personally am enjoying it. I really am liking it. And the fact that it starts off with John Greenwald is a plus for me.
Yeah, I think it starts and stops and ends with John Greenwald. And John, look, we're talking about MJ-12 and Majestic 12 today. So John, in episode one, I just sat back and smiled. I said, man, that's my bro, man. That's my bro. And, wow. Well, okay. Everybody watch all four episodes and check back in with me. Now let's move on. Let's move on. Back to, Forrestal. Okay. Now here's the deal. Okay. I want you to pop this up in the comments if you can, because I can't comment. If I do, I get blown out of the room. Is this, there's a movie out and it's most excellent. It's called The 11th Green, like a golf course, right? Okay, The 11th Green. Put that in. Everybody go and watch it. It is called The 11th Green. It's like $3 or something on Amazon. Totally worth the price of admission because it's also about what we're talking about now. And the 11th Green, I'm going to make this brief, is a drama. It's not a documentary. This is a film. And it involves Eisenhower and Barack Obama going into a dream state and talking about Eisenhower's deal with the aliens that he made. And so they go back in time, it's shot on location in Palm Springs. Really well done film. And it's great. I mean, obviously a work of fiction, but is it, right? And it's I watched it last night, in the film is Forrestal. So they reenact what happened. And so now let's talk about James Forrestal for a second. James Forrestal is on this list. James Forrestal at the time, I believe he was the Secretary of Defense in the cabinet. I could look it up. But anyway, he was like the boss of the military, right? Okay, so he gets involved in the UFO question, and it was some of this public knowledge. And okay, I got a text from John Greenwald now interrupting. And so I'm texting you while I'm watching you. Don't get distracted. Yeah, thanks, John. So he gets committed to a mental institution at Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. I believe John Greenwald can correct me on all these facts. He's the walking pillar of knowledge with all of this stuff. But he gets committed. There were stories, and they're still out there today. This is part of mythology, that he was getting ready to break out with disclosure. He was frustrated with the UFO question. He had the facts. He had the knowledge. And then he mysteriously jumps out the 12th floor window of his hospital room and commits suicide. Now, was he mentally unstable? Who committed him? Was it his family? Was it the military? Don't know. It's all clouded in mystery. There are rumors that there were a couple of suited up men, not a military, that visited his room right before his death. They walk out of his room. He jumps out the window. So this scene is in this movie, The 11th Green, which I've read about James Forrestal and how he died many times. Mysterious, absolutely very strange situation. But his name is on this list for the Majestic. Mm-hmm. Well, oh, great question. And it looks like my interruption fees have gone up. We've gone up to $5. Thank you for that, Charles.
So he says, is anyone starting to get tired of NHI's bullshit? All this is still a mystery because they want it to be. They've been messing with humanity for thousands.
Okay, but who's Thank NHI? You.
I'm happy you had the same question because I didn't know what that was.
I'm starting to get tired of NHI's BS. Okay. Yeah. Well, who's NHI? And then we can circle back to that.
Oh, it says non-human intelligence.
Oh, okay. So
thank you, Charles.
What was the question again?
Let me go ahead and pull it up. Everyone in the live chat, you're making it so lively. Thank you so much. So it says, here it is. You want me to read it again to you?
Okay. Is anyone starting to get tired of non-human intelligence's BS? All of this is still a mystery because they want it to be. Well, I'm not tired of it. I would think that if we are in contact, I believe that we are, they would have to be dealing with us, working out a way to deal with us with our low IQ, right? They're dealing with something that I can't imagine trying to teach my dog quantum physics, right?
Right. I mean, that's impossible.
Theory of relativity. I'm not sure that they can absorb that, but we figure out a way to communicate with our dogs and our pets at that level. And it's tough for us. It's not easy. It's not easy to housebreak a pet. That's a lot of work. And you're dealing with, that's just the way that ET dealing with us, they got to figure out a way to communicate with us at a level that we understand. We want to understand. Our dogs want to understand. They're happy when they figure it out, right? Ah, yeah. Well, it's the same thing with us. If we could figure it out, we would be happy. Look, okay, we get it. We get it. But unfortunately, we're dealing with something that is just, I don't know how many years, but is far more advanced than us. And there isn't another way to look at it than that. So frustrated, yeah, but your dog is probably frustrated too as you're trying to housebreak them, because when they figure it out, it's like, oh, you want me to go outside? Oh, okay, that's easy. Let's go. I want to go outside now. And then when that happens, it's all good, but you have to get to that point. So that's where we are now. Let's not get frustrated. It's all good. It's all good.
No, we can't get frustrated. So John says, can you finish up your answer about John Mack and MJ12? Do you think there's a connection there?
I don't believe that there is a connection. I haven't heard of a direct connection. John Mack, it always goes back to Harvard these days. Everything seems to go back to Harvard. And, you know, so we have John Mack. We've got Avi Loeb right now,
which I will be interviewing on Friday, guys. So if you haven't already, click the bell so that you don't miss the interview, because it's going to be a lot earlier than usual.
I wrote Avi today. What? Christine before Fade to Black?
What's it's going to be in the morning.
No, I've got him on next week. I've got him on next week. But yeah, Avi Loeb is great. Again, Harvard, you know, stuffed shirt academics, you know, so black and white, right? But yet it seems that all of the crazy fringe thought comes out of Harvard. That's a bizarre thing to me. Now, was John Mack linked? No. John Mack, to the best of my knowledge, was never connected to a secret covert government group studying UFOs and the phenomenon. I don't believe so.
Well, John says three people of the same name of John Mack died the same day in England. Suspicious. That's bizarre.
Yeah, John, that's been poured over many times. And what's even stranger, three people named John have now posted questions in the chat.
No.
Yeah. Is there something to it? How about John Music? Is there something to that? Yeah. But anyway, so let's get back to this, though. The other part to this, as I started to explain earlier, is that Jamie Chanderay, Bill Moore, Rick Doty, on the outside looking in is Stanton Friedman, also Linda Moulton Howe. She gets involved too as well. And that is the creation of documents, including Majestic 12 and MJ12 and other documents, by Rick Doty and his team. Rick doing his job, as he claims, and I believe that's, you know, you're taking orders. This is the Air Force. He's being shipped documents, and they're trying to influence the community, influence the press, influence the media with this information. But some of it is true. And that is what we have to look at with not only Majestic 12 and MJ12, but any of the leaked stuff that comes out. We have to take a look at that and see what's real and what's not. Look, if it's all fake, then it's too easy to blow out of the water, right? You've got nuggets of truth in there to throw everybody off of the scent and keep them focused on the documents. Well, this is, you know, and especially if you're going through and you go, oh, Hillenkoetter. Okay, yes, he was in this city on this date, and it says in the documents that he was here, and he wrote this document. His name is, and so let's go back and let's go to the Hillenkoetter Library in the files, wherever they're sitting at some university, and you go and you pull that up and you look at his calendar, and his secretary has sent out a letter on this date. He is going to the, and you go, that's the easy stuff to prove. But who would know that unless you had access to these documents, because they're not digital, right?
Yeah. Who's living in that time?
That's the other way to look at all of this. Now, so if we go and take a look at not only Majestic 12, but what is the idea behind Majestic 12? the idea behind it, you know, this group of intellectuals and military and political figures and teachers and professors and scientists, that they're all grouped together looking at the UFO subject. And then you back up and you do what somebody like bringing up John Greenwald, where you go back and you start to cross-reference FBI documents, CIA documents, reports, findings, things going to and from the White House, things going to and from the White House or White Sands or Tonopah and Wright-Patterson, these different areas around the country where these communications are happening, claims are made, statements are made, you know, that these vehicles are not of this earth. They're not ours. The Soviets don't have the technology. Nobody even mentioned China back then because China wasn't a player in anything. So it was always the Soviet Union, possibly the Germans, and us. And you start to look at all of this. Well, then, of course, we would have to have a group of individuals assembled somewhere that can look at all of this information, discuss it, and try to figure out what's going on. And that's the part about Majestic 12 that I believe is real. I do. I absolutely, steadfastly believe that our government has to have assembled these intellectuals together for us, for humanity. And if they didn't do it, they weren't doing their job, Christina.
That leads me to my next question, is what are your thoughts on the Majestic 12 manual? The manual one. That one's interesting. And I was also covered, I think it was on Ancient Aliens as well. And I'll go ahead and share my screen in just a moment. But for people that haven't read it, the link is in the description box below for those that want to read it. And it just goes into depth on, well, I'll read you the title. It says Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology, Recovery and Disposal, Top Secret Magic Eyes Only. And it goes into depth on how to discredit people that see these objects, right? But also how to go and collect crash retrievals, right? Or entities as well. And I found this document incredibly interesting. And I think for those that might read it today, right? Even if this manual is a hoax, or if it's true, there's already information in there for us presently in 2021 that can go ahead and believe all of this information and say, yeah, that sounds about right. We've heard this in almost every story that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. But I want to hear your thoughts on it. Do you think it's legitimate? And why do you think so, or why not?
What I did, I come from a graphic design background. Now you're looking at these guitars behind me and everybody knows about my music and things, but I was an artist. And during my, keep this up on the screen. This is what I want to talk about. I was an artist. I was a graphic design artist. I worked at Bell Laboratories. I worked at Bell Laboratories for 3 years in their art group and worked very hard at not only learning my craft, but other graphic design elements that are out there. And when you jump into this, you learn typesetting, you know, the efforts that go into it, not only with fonts, but formatting and the printing industry and the creating of plates and the films and the negatives and everything that is involved with this. So I looked at it from that perspective. And when I went back and looked at the manual, and also the S101 manual too, as well. I looked at, go ahead and scroll through. I looked at, stop right there. I looked at all of this formatting. Okay. This is done by, and back then, this is easy to do today. We have Word, we have word processing programs. We have the ability to print. You can go and create anything like this and go and make your own book on Amazon and you're suddenly an author and a publisher. But back then, this right here that is on the screen, this was work. This was work by a typesetting professional. This was work by a graphic design professional. The fonts, the use, the formatting, and all of this was difficult. None of this was easy. And I went and looked at that, thinking about the world of typesetting in prior to 1985. you had to have like, if you had modern equipment, you had a CompuGraphic 5000 typesetting machine that worked with film and lights and things. And that's if you had the good stuff. Before that, it was just difficult. And you had to lay this out and get this done. And so this document was created back then by a top shelf graphic design department that had the ability to typeset, that had the knowledge of not only graphic design, but what it takes to put this into a graphic format. And that's when this was not done by kids. This wasn't done in some, no, this right here is the real deal. All of it. It was created by somebody that had not only the resources, but the resources of money, the resources of talent, and the resources of equipment. And then you had the resources of the mind, because this was written and edited before it ever goes to typesetting. So that's the part that most people don't talk about because they don't have the knowledge of it. They think that all of this stuff is easily done today. Well, not when this document was released. It was a different world back then. I've been very outspoken about this over the years on many documents. I just mentioned with the original Majestic 12 stuff, that was not done on a typesetting machine like the manual was. And the manual to be done on a typesetting machine, this is shot on film, paper film, and these galleys are created. Then they're cut out. Those are pasted on a page. You have to paste them up in the right order because they have to be printed in the right order. Then you have to assemble it into a book. All of this is a big deal.
And that's why it was so hard to authenticate it, because they didn't have the actual paper. So that was another really big kind of red flag for a lot of people that could easily say that they could debunk it just because it wasn't on real paper, but instead it was on a film. Which leads me to my question. What are your thoughts on that? Why was it on film? Was it supposed to be some kind of confusing component to where they knew that it couldn't be authenticated? Or was it just someone trying to snip it up really quickly and trying to publicize it to the world?
Well, okay, if we take Rick Doty at his word and we think about this, well, okay, the documents were created in Washington, D.C., some art room at the Pentagon, and they typed all of this stuff up with the archivist and got it created, and they just photographed it. They photographed it and developed the film, put the film in envelope, and sent it to Jamie Chanderay. They already had Jamie Chanderay's address and Bill Moore. They all worked with Rick Doty. Now, is this a possibility? I think that Rick has stated, I would have to go back. I should almost get him on the phone. I think that he stated he didn't have anything directly to do with MJ-12, which means he did, but that he knows that the documents were created in Washington, D.C. But that,
look, Doty's a really shady figure altogether, and he's not my favorite topic. John Music, thank you once again. You are always so kind. He says, Jimmy, do you think MJ-12 still exists, or do you think that the black corporate classified WSAP, waived unacknowledged special access program, took over that role in dealing with alien tech?
Both.
That's a good question.
Yeah, both. Because, John, it's a great question, but you're actually asking two or three things here.
Which he's good at. He's good at that.
Yeah, he is pretty good at it. But it's this. Does MJ-12 still exist? Well, it depends. Majestic 12. Are we talking about it? It's two things. Majestic 12 and MJ-12, two separate things. But Majestic 12, the group of 12, it does exist. I don't think it ever went away. Is it called Majestic 12?
Probably not.
Probably not. And also, I remember, I got to make this really brief, and I don't want to poo-poo on everybody with this, but I believe my mind says that Bill Moore was trying to either write a book or make a movie about this group called Magic 12. You know, like it was all made up. And that's where the name came from. It came from the mind of Bill Moore. And now Philip Klass, my memory says, got involved with this. And another researcher and another journalist pulled up these facts about Bill Moore's past. And he was shopping this book idea or this film idea or TV series, whatever, about this group of 12 people that were, you know, doing this UFO thing inside of the government. And that shot down all of this. So that's the origins of it. So Majestic 12, MJ-12, this group of 12 by that name. No, I think that's a fictionalized component of this. But do I believe that there is a group of individuals, university professors, scientists, heads of corporations, heads of military, space, NASA, that collectively get together and discuss this and share their data? 100% absolutely it exists. What are they called? I have no idea. Maybe John Greenwald knows.
And first I want to say thank you so much, Bob, for the $4.99 super sticker. Thank you so much. And John, kind of just to skim over your question, what I think and what I've heard as well is if a secret project comes out, right, and the name is known, they're going to change the name as soon as possible to something completely different. So is it called Majestic 12 today or MJ-12? Absolutely not. I do not think so. It probably has even a cooler name than that or a different name altogether, because it's a secret group for a reason. If the name comes out, then it's not secret anymore.
The JAC Task Force. That's what I heard. The JAC Task Force.
Charles says, I would love to hear from both of you concerning J-Rod.
Ah, I love J-Rod. Oh, now I'm interrupted for $69.99.
Oh my gosh. It says,
went up.
Coming late to the show. Sorry if this was discussed already. What about Zodiac? Well, first, let's address Charles.
Why does this happen at the end of the show, Jean?
Because they don't want it at the end. They never want the show to end. But J-Rod, can you, Jimmy, explain what that is or who that is?
Okay. Now, J-Rod's one of my favorite subjects. And when we talk about, J-Rod is an extraterrestrial that was live, interviewed, caught on tape. J-Rod, I believe, I mean, I don't want to sound crazy, but I think J-Rod exists. Now, do I think J-Rod exists publicly in the images? No, all those images have been debunked and have been tied back to other things. But J-Rod physically, is J-Rod real? Yeah, I believe that there is ET right now hanging out with the government, talking, yapping, playing video games, doing all of that stuff, and being interviewed. Now, has that stuff been leaked publicly? Is this, if we go back, I think some of the original conversations, but listen, to be clear, are there live extraterrestrial races on this planet right now hanging out with the government underneath the Pentagon, Area 51 hotel room in Des Moines, Iowa? You know, I don't, yeah, I believe that exists. J-Rod and some of the stuff that was there, I believe Rick Doty, if you're watching right now, some of the those Fox specials back in the day in the background where they've got somebody with their face covered and they're shadowed. And
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was friggin' Rick Doty. So I believe, I'm telling you right now, I think that was Rick Doty. But was J-Rod ever interviewed? Are these tapes that have been out there? Doesn't feel right to me. And if J-Rod, which he or she does exist, we're not going to see video of that. We're just not. That's at a whole nother level of secrecy that Christina.
Not anytime soon.
Yeah, you and I know nothing about that level of darkness.
No, we don't have that super ultra clearance. And Gene, I want to say thank you so much as well. And we haven't discussed Zodiac. Do you want to go over that as well, Jimmy, in 2 minutes or less?
What version of Zodiac?
It just says, what about Zodiac? And someone that did talk about this recently was James from Engaging the Phenomenon on his YouTube channel when he interviewed Richard Doland. And they did go and talk in depth on the project. And from what I grasped from it, and maybe I'm wrong, so please correct me if I'm incorrect, but Project Zodiac is, or at least similar to MJ-12.
Yeah, let me, I'm just going to pull it up really quick.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna hold off on this. Let's save that for another show, and I'll talk to Richard about this, and then we'll swing this back to Fader Night in a couple of nights, and I'll tackle this head on.
Please do, because I want to know more about it. It's not something that I've done a lot of research on, but because of everyone that's in the live chat, I usually go over it, and it really helps broaden my research as well. And I want to say we will start 30 minutes earlier next week because I want to finish on time for Michael Mattaluni Singularity Lab show as we share the practically the same audience at 4 p.m. on Tuesdays. So we will continue with a part two next week at 2:30 PST. And it is up to Jimmy if he wants to join or not for next week, because he always has an open invitation, but he's never pressured to do so.
Never... I'm not saying nothing. No. I've got an NDA that I've signed with Christina. So I really can't go into that in depth. And yeah, let's just cause some more rumors. You know, I think that's what we should do. And
might as well.
What, you know, this is what I have found over the years. There were certain things that have happened in the last 20 or 30 years with me personally in my research. And there were these big, momentous, huge moments, giant bumps in the road that we all had to navigate, and of which, you know, I would say dozens, if not hundreds, of things that have broke over the years. One of them is this subject, and Majestic 12, and further on down the road was MJ-12, and it caused such an uproar. If you think that you know, ATIP and OSAP and TTSA and Tic Tacs and everything that's going on is exciting, you didn't live through those days of Majestic 12 and MJ-12.
And the good music at the time as well.
What it did to the community and what Stanton and the crew went through. Stanton, I mean, going to the Library of Congress and stealing documents. You know, how crazy is that?
It is, but also kind of invigorating. Like, that's would make my blood just flow so much that I would probably pass out. April says, thank you, Christina. As always, you are wonderful. I have to go do boring grown-up things now. I feel that, and I never wanted to be a grown-up. And now we're all grown-ups here, and it's depressing,
man,
honestly.
What a great name, April Bathory.
It's so pretty. Jimmy, can you tell everyone where they can find you and what time your show is tonight?
My show is airing in 3 hours at jimmychurchradio.com. That's all you got to do. Go follow me on Twitter at jchurchradio if you don't already. We broadcast live Monday through Thursday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time live. You can go over to jimmychurchradio.com. All of your sources are there if you want YouTube, or if you want a membership, if you want to listen for free, if you just want to listen to the audio and run that in the background. If you like Facebook or iHeartRadio, whatever it is that you want to listen to the show on, everything is right there. So go to jimmychurchradio.com and come and join us live tonight. We have two or three chat rooms that are open. Christina is always hanging out with us there too as well. And I'll see everybody tonight. Tonight is Stephen Bassett tonight. Tonight's broadcast is show number 1,470.
Oh my gosh. That's insane.
470. If you did a show, one show a week live, that would take you 12 years.
Yeah. I don't think I have that.
One show a week live, 12 years to get to that number. And it's crazy that we're sitting at 1,470 tonight with Stephen Bassett, and we're discussing the new Netflix documentary series that just came out. We're now over time.
Season.
Yeah, we're now over time. Bye, everybody. I'll see you guys tonight live on Fade to Black. Thank you, Christina. You're the best.
Thank you. I'll see you soon. Bye, Jimmy. Oh, my goodness. It's always, you never know what you're going to get when he comes on the show. Like, I write so many notes, and it never goes that way, which I love it, because you get a fresh, different perspective that you won't usually get with your own research. Does that make sense? So I love having guests, all kinds of guests, come onto the show and just really bring in their fresh, different, and sometimes odd perspective. Quickly want to say thank you so much, Jack D. Whiskey, for the $1.99 super sticker. Thank you so much. And if you want to continue the discussion, bring it to my Discord server and join me and over 270 others as a topic for debate, to share knowledge, and to overall to have a good time. So everyone, thank you for joining me. Thank you, as always, to all my wonderful Patreon supporters. This show wouldn't be possible without your kind support sticking with me on this journey. Thank you for joining me here today, as I always say. And remember, keep your eyes on the skies.